for July 28, 2005. We're in work session, and we'll start with Senate Bill 5629, Military Veterans Benefits. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 5629 is one part of the military veterans package, benefits package approved for this session. The bill appropriates money for benefit programs that are established or improved in Senate Bill 1100. It also appropriates money to fund tuition waivers established by Senate Bill 486, which has been signed into law. The bill provides $500,000 to the Oregon Military Department for tuition waivers to National Guard members or surviving family to attend college. This program was authorized in SB 486, which is now Chapter 200, Oregon Laws 2005. It also appropriates $500,000 to the Oregon Military Emergency Financial Assistance Fund for the Oregon Military Department to provide hardship grants and loans to members and immediate family of the Oregon National Guard members on active duty. Payments out of this fund are other funds, and the bill provides $500,000 other funds expenditure limitation to the department to make payments from the fund. It further provides $2.6 million to the Department of Veterans Affairs for payments to counties for the county veterans service officers. The subcommittee adopted a budget note instructing the department to report to the emergency board no later than December 31st of this year on its rules distribute by formula the funds appropriated for this purpose. I think what it means to say that they want them to come back to the e-board and explain how the distribution formula is being worked.
We knew what it meant if you would just read it properly.
Thank you, Mr. Westland. Senate Bill 5629 was a blank appropriations bill, and the -1 amendment was approved to provide this part of the military veterans benefit funding. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 5629 be amended and reported out to pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Objection. Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 2A, relating to seismic safety. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. These are the President's bills. Senate Bill 2 directs the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, DGAMI, to develop statewide seismic needs assessments of public school buildings, fire stations, police stations, and hospitals. As amended, the bill provided $500,000 in funds for the Department to begin this work. DGAMI was directed to work with the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Committee, created in Senate Bill 3, which we'll hear about in a moment, to identify which groups of buildings should be assessed first. Once this policy choice is made, DGAMI is to begin conducting assessments on the designated buildings. Due to the limited amount of funding being provided compared to the department's initial estimate of the $1.3 million to complete all the assessment work, the department is directed to use existing resources to the greatest extent possible to supplement the $500,000 fund being made available to begin the statewide assessment. The department was also directed to use temporary employees and or professional service contracts to conduct the actual assessment work to the greatest extent possible. DGAMI will report the emergency board with a work plan and an estimate of additional funding necessary to complete the needs assessment. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends that Bill 2 be amended and report out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Objection. Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 3A, relating to seismic rehabilitation. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 3A requires the Director of the Office of Emergency Management to develop and administer a grant program for seismic rehabilitation of critical public buildings. A grant committee appointed by the Director will review grant applications and determine funding based on a scoring system related to the statewide needs assessment conducted by the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries as directed by Senate Bill 2, which we just heard about. Grant funding would come from the issuance of bonds from Article 11M and 11N of the Oregon Constitution. The cost for the Office of Emergency Management to develop a grant program is not known at this time because program details will rely in part on DGAMI's findings from the statewide needs assessment. The assessment is to be completed by July of 2007. The Office of Emergency Management can request funding from the Emergency Board if needed to begin designing the grant program based on DGAMI's progress. Mm-hmm. Further, the bonding level that might be authorized to fund the grant program cannot be estimated until rehabilitation needs are determined and priorities are established. No bond authority will be available in the 05-07 biennium. Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 3A be reported out due pass.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not speaking against the intent of this bill because I think it's worthy, but there is a serious flaw in the bill, and that is that it assigns to the director and the grant committee the authority to make a determination of funding based on a scoring system that is directly related to the statewide needs assessment performed by the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. What that language says, as I read it plainly, is that the authority to make these grants and to incur indebtedness, general obligation bond indebtedness of the state of Oregon, resides with a committee, not with the legislative body. And if that could be clarified differently, then I would certainly appreciate learning that, in fact, my understanding is incorrect.
That's enough comment.
Chair and committee members, this bill is just one piece of making it work. The actual bond authorization authority would be in separate bills and would also require legislative approval in order for any bonding to occur. So the language in the bill does say that they shall make a determination of funding based on that scoring system, but in reality, the authority to authorize bonds rests with the legislature, and obviously the authority of the legislature to create a budget that has debt service to cover those bonds is also beyond the scope of Bill 3.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Helpful, thank you. Further discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 4A, relating to general obligation bonds, Senator Bates.
Senate Bill 4 allows the state treasurer, with the concurrence of DAS director, to issue Article 11M education seismic bonds for a seismic rehabilitation of public education building subject to specified limits and refunds. It also allows the state treasurer to transfer bond net proceeds to the Office of Merchant Management for a deposit of the education seismic fund to be distributed or for seismic projects. It creates a bond fund in the state treasury to hold monies that will be used to pay debt service on outstanding bonds, and creates a bond administration fund to hold the monies used to pay costs related to the issuance and ongoing administration of the bonds. It authorizes state treasurer to structure bond sales consistent with other state bond programs, and provides that the bonds are general obligation bonds of the state of Oregon as provided in the Oregon Constitution. It requires the Department of Administrative Services to submit a budget request for debt service to be paid in each biennium that bonds are outstanding. As amended, the bill does not authorize issuance of any Article 11M bonds in 0507. This will be a decision for the 2007 legislature to make once it has seismic needs assessment information from Dogami, and the grant program has been developed by OEM. Your Senate Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends Senate Bill 4 be amended and reported out due pass.
Next, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Senate Bill 5A, the last in a series, related to state. Senator Bates.
Thank you again, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5 allows state treasurer, with the concurrence of DAS director, to issue Article 11N emergency service seismic bonds for a seismic rehabilitation of emergency service buildings subject to specified limits and refunds. It has the same components and provisions as Senate Bill 4 to allow Treasurer, DAS, and the Office of Emergency Management to manage all aspects of this new general bond obligation program. This bill was amended so that it does not authorize issuance of any Article 11N bonds in 2005-07. This will be a decision for the 07 legislature to make once it has seismic needs assessment information from Dogami, and the grant program has been developed by OEM. Your Senate Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends Senate Bill 5 be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Senator Johnson.
Just a clarification, having not heard the committee testimony, but this talks, I think, about seismic upgrades, and I'm thinking about some schools that I'm aware of that house more than 250 people, where upgrading a brick building is an old brick building is ostensibly not possible. Would this contemplate replacement as well as upgrade?
Staff, you want to help with that, if you may?
Chair and committee members, the bond authorization is established in the Constitution would only allow for rehabilitation of existing buildings versus replacement. And so that's why the needs assessment and the prioritization, because the bonding limit is also capped at 1/5 of 1% of the state's real property value, which is approximately $620 million. So there will be a prioritization that will occur, and the spending of the money, if authorized, would be for rehabilitation versus replacement.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So an all-brick building, Kirk in 1910,
tough.
It will depend upon the priorities established and the amount of funding that's available and the risks.
Okay, thank you.
You can fix it, but you can't replace it with these particular bonds and the way the ballot measure was passed.
Yeah.
I might add to that, if I could.
Please.
There are some old buildings, especially school buildings, that have been around for 100 years, and there are new regulations being implemented that say if you can't justify the building from the point of view of safety, that the buildings have to be abandoned. And I know several districts have had, especially small districts, have had to look at their buildings and say, what's the best thing to do, rehab it or build a new building and take the old one down? It just happened in Central Point. It happened in Eagle Point. And the way they're looking at these things, because these buildings were first built, there were little or no regulations concerning earthquakes. Now those regulations are in place. The new buildings have them in when they build them, but the districts have to make decisions based on the new regulations. And I believe the way I read this is that this ties into that. If you're going to rehab the building, you can probably access this if you're on the priority list. If you're not, the replacement of the building is probably going to be at the expense of the district. Am I reading this correctly?
No, it would be outside bond authority.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, the expense of this endeavor is likely to be one that will shock people beyond belief. And my guess is that in future legislatures, as we deal and wrestle with this issue, it'll be almost an impossible conundrum. I would guess to do this well and bring these buildings up to a Zone 3 code, that you're probably looking at, I wouldn't be surprised, you'd be in the category of a general fund appropriation in construction rehabilitation costs. It will be huge.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to prolong this, but if people would look at the Department of Education website, there's a section of it that has statistics. But I think, I can't remember the numbers exactly, but it would indicate, I think, roughly that more than 50% of Oregon school buildings are more than 50 years old. So the problem is huge.
Further discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Keeping with the theme here today, Senate Bill 557A relating to tsunami warning systems. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This will be the last bill today for me, and the last disaster bill, I hope. Senate Bill 557-B provides for a standardized alarm warning system indicating a tsunami is imminent and directs the distribution of information to coastal visitors about the tsunami hazard and how to respond. The Oregon State Police Office of Emergency Management, in consultation with the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, shall develop and adopt by rule tsunami warning information evacuation plans for distribution to transient lodging facilities and other locations located within a tsunami inundation zones, and establish by rule uniform tsunami warning signal specifications. OEM or Dagami may seek and accept gifts, grants, and donations from any source to finance the duties and responsibilities under this measure. However, OEM is not required to carry out the assigned duties of this measure if sufficient monies are not available from gifts, grants, and/or donations. OEM reports that a funding source has yet to be identified, but federal funds remain one option. When a funding source or sources is identified, OEM or Dagami may need to seek supplemental other limitation or federal grant approval, and if grant approval is obtained, federal funds limitation from either the emergency board or a regular legislative session. Such committee recommends Senate Bill 557 be amended and put out due pass as amended. Just a further comment, Mr. Co-Chair. I was a little bit surprised, having driven up and down the coast and seen tsunami warnings and sirens, that the entire coast is not covered. There are many areas of the coast that have no warnings and no evacuation zones, and this is trying to make it more uniform up and down the coast.
Further discussion? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're building a legislative record here, I guess I just feel compelled to offer the comments that I hope as OEM and Dogami get into rule promulgation that they make sure that they have local folks involved in the rulemaking, and that we don't presume to tell people living along the coast who struggle with this issue and work with this issue how to do it from Salem, but that we get local law enforcement and that we use some degree of common sense in terms of the requirements for distribution to coastal visitors. I think this last scare proved that despite everybody's best effort, there's a tendency to want to run down to the water, so we know we've got a problem. But I think keeping in mind that people living along the coast have a pretty clear understanding of what needs to be done, I just want to make sure that common sense and locals are included and we don't let bureaucracy from Salem hold sway over the rule promulgation.
Further discussion?
Well, just a question. Senator Wortley. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I recall a discussion in the Public Safety Subcommittee with the Office of Emergency Management about not a study, but there was a group looking at the aftermath of the last tsunami warning to see what lessons had been learned. And I'm wondering if this piece of legislation is in any way informed by what that particular group has been looking at. Where did the two come together?
Chair Schrader, member of the committee, my name is Ken Murphy, Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and we are just now finishing, should be done tomorrow, the report on the June 14th event, both from the federal level, the state level, and then brief dissertations from each city and county, and that was one of the issues that we discussed because of the lack of warning systems or the different tones or whatever the case may be, even weather problems, because the Oregon coast obviously does things to sirens that maybe Eastern Oregon, the chemical stockpile program, is not quite as wet. So that is part of it. We're also using the GAO is assisting us in this. They're doing a separate congressional-directed investigation into it. And so we've taken that into account. This particular piece of legislation was before the 03 legislative session. So we've been working on these issues for quite some time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll have that report available to the legislature here next week on the findings from all the different levels.
And can we just assume, Mr. Chair, that the findings are in alignment with what is in the measure mm-hmm. before us?
Yeah, it does address those two particular issues and numerous others.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Senate Bill 570A, relating to crops. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 570A would prohibit growing, raising, or cultivating certain genetically engineered plants. The bill, as amended, has no enforcement component and therefore has no physical impact. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 570A be amended and report out due pass as amended. Just to make a clarification here, this bill is aimed only at those genetically engineered plants that are being genetically engineered to produce pharmaceuticals or chemicals. There are none of those being grown in Oregon at this time. The Department of Agriculture usually addresses the state agriculture department, asks for their permission to do so in a state, and usually follows the recommendation of that department. This would direct the department to, for a period of 4 years, to not allow genetically engineered plants to produce chemicals or pharmaceuticals to be grown in the state. It would still be the decision by the Department of Agriculture whether they did it or not. But generally speaking, the Department of Agriculture has followed the recommendation of the State Department of Agriculture. It does not have any enforcement involved in it, though that therefore is no cost to the department. It's simply a matter of saying yes or no.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I have concerns about this bill. I understand that the agriculture community in Oregon is divided on it, the Grange having felt that they can support it, the Farm Bureau having reservations. I'm going to provide a courtesy yes today, but reserve the opportunity to vote no on the floor.
Very good.
Yeah.
Further discussion? Senator Westland.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Sir.
Is there any prohibition in the bill from our universities, institutions of higher learning, particularly OHSU and OSU, from doing research with regard to any of the the biopharma crops.
There's no specific statement that they can't do that. However, this asks the Department of Agriculture not to allow it in the state, so in essence that would be something that would probably block them from doing it if the Department of Agriculture said no. The big concern here is not genetically altered crops. That's something that's being accepted more and more and is going on in the state, that these crops are specifically quite different in that they're going to be developed to produce pharmaceuticals and chemicals. And I think the concern is, obviously, that if you have a pharmaceutical crop being grown and it somehow gets out into the food supply, you're, in a sense, giving people a drug, whether it be digitalis or whatever drug you want to pick. And the idea is just to slow this down and have an opportunity to see if this really can be controlled better and that this not be one of the proven grounds in the United States for it. That's the essence of this bill.
So to repeat, the simple answer to my question is yes, this bill does shut down research in OHSU or...
If the Department of the Federal Department of Agriculture asked that be allowed, and the State Department is then instructed to say no, the Department of Agriculture could still bring it into the state. It does not say we can't control them. We make a recommendation to them, and that's all.
Senator Devlin.
From my understanding of the discussion, though, and when Senator Westland said that it could shut down research, there is no research of this type occurring now because it's not being done in the state at this time.
To my knowledge, it's not being done now, but the possibility of what the university is asking to do it is real.
And they'd be told
but a clarification also in that is that this would be, thank you, Mr. Chairman, this would be a prohibition on actually growing the crops. It would not be a prohibition on researching, pure research, in a sense. It would not involve actually growing pharmaceutical producing crops or crops that would produce chemicals that could be used in pharmaceuticals. Pure research on what is occurring in other states could probably still occur in this state.
I expect that it potentially could, but I have a hard time believing you could do this without growing a crop. That's something, I mean, just to be honest about it. I get on that one. Okay.
I have the bill's progenitor to come up and make a quick statement on that. You understand the question?
Yeah.
Make sure you identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick North. I'm with the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. The question regarding what kinds of research are accepted, this bill would say no to outdoor growing of biopharmaceutical or industrial crops, either food or non-food crops, and use of food crops either indoor or outdoors. Those are the categories it would exclude and would affect. It would not affect all kinds of research in terms of, it would not affect non-food plants, genetically engineered plants, grown indoors. There we feel the possible benefits outweigh the risks. It would not affect genetically engineered crops to produce more or less of a substance that the plant produces naturally. It would not affect plants that have been approved by the FDA for food crops that may also have applications for industrial pharmaceutical crops. And it would also not affect plants that produce drugs or industrial chemicals naturally without genetic engineering. So it is very narrowly prescribed to just the ones we feel are most likely to be contaminating our food supply and wildlife and our water supply.
Thank you. Further discussion? Someone else want to comment?
Oh, Mr. Chair,
there
are so many questions surrounding this in the community that's divided. Some agree and some not agree. And for me, I need to have better clarification, and I'm not willing to vote to give you an I vote on this because I need to have more information on it.
Certainly. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clear a potential conflict of interest, I'm currently growing genetically engineered plants. They may not be subject to this bill. But my idea of this thing is I think a great portion of the ag industry opposes this. And to me, this bill is one of these. This is no threat to it. And my good friend, former Senator Vern Duncan, would just love this bill. It would fit right in with him. But it's just one of these things where we're not trusting the industry. I mean, this thing isn't catching on any place in the country, so why are we even looking at it?
Further discussion. Senator Morris.
I will be a no, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Why don't we do a, if there's no further discussion, why don't we do a roll call vote on this?
Mr. Chair, just one question.
Senator Gordon.
Could we get a statement about what the committee process was around this bill? Number of hearings and...
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that. Staff?
Pro and con, who came to testify, and... I'm not finding anything in my bill file.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, this bill had a hearing or a work session today in the subcommittee. And as you can see, it's primarily a policy issue. And as fiscal staff, we just noted that it was non-fiscal and made an amendment. And it looks like it had one public hearing in April in the Environment and Land Use Committee, and a work session in May.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, in our committee today, we dealt strictly with the physical, took the physical out of it, took the enforcement out. That's all we did. Dash 4, or the Section 4 was taken out.
Senator Johnson?
So to follow up on that, we have no staff measure summary available to us that talks about what issues were discussed previously, who testified. One of the things that concerns me in our discussion today is that I don't know whether or not the universities have had ample opportunity to come forward, and I'm thinking about the fact that we were able to refund the forestry and ag experiment, and I don't know to what degree this affects any of the universities. This prohibition on research is new news to me, and I think is worrisome.
We get Senator Shields to come up. Want to answer that?
State Senator Frank Shields from Senate District 24. The reason I can respond a little bit, I guess, is because I was on that Environment and Land Use Committee when the hearings were held. And I have provided some members of the committee with some comments from people at OHSU about its effect on research and not being concerned. You got to remember that when you do research in contained facilities indoors, it's not going to contaminate out there. That was discussed in committee. Several other things were discussed in committee. I thought the hearing was a good hearing. If you wanted, you could call Senator Ringo, who's, I think, still in a building, to come down and give you his recollection. Of course, these have been hearings that were a long time ago, but... I think we had a fairly extensive hearing on the bill.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Senator Bates and Senator Devlin?
To your memory, Senator, and from what I was told, because I was not that hearing or that work session, it was passed out with a recommendation, but it had a physical attached to it, and that's why it came to, to our committee.
At that point, it had Section 4 in the bill, which we deleted in the Ways and Means sub. Prior to that, I mean, if it hadn't had that, it wouldn't have been referred to Ways and Means at all, I don't think. So that's why we got rid of Section 4 of the bill. And in a sense, Section 4 takes away the enforcement of the bill, and it essentially makes it a moral statement. It just says, not moral, I didn't want to use that word. It makes it a, I used the word earlier today. It's more a matter of moral suasion. It just kind of says to people, hey, be careful about growing crops outdoors that could, if you're growing a pharmaceutical crop, infect a field next to it, because you know what pollination is like. And I think that's why the agriculture community is divided. The Farm Bureau is against it, and yet the Grange had a long process and came out in favor of it. So, you know, I think it's more a matter of moral suasion. There's no enforcement here. It just says this is not a good thing to do. Think about it.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to give a perspective on this. In terms of whether this has had a full policy airing, I think if you compare it to the many bills that
instead
we did pass.
Center bill. Senator Shields, if you want to say that, that's fine.
In relation to this, if this has had a full public hearing, I think if you relate this to the many bills that actually have passed this session, I think that this has had as much hearings as anything practically that we have passed. I also know that it's been an item of discussion in terms of people talking to members, members talking to members. I have had people visit me that are proponents of the bill, people visit me that are opponents of the bill. I know that there's a disagreement about whether this should be done or not, but I don't think we should use as an excuse the fact that maybe there should be more public hearings at this particular juncture in the legislature. I think if we have a disagreement, it should be whether or not this actually does something we believe should or should not be done. Also, I think that the fact that when you see that under controlled circumstances this would still permit research, I can almost assure you, having introduced a few bills that the university system took some interest in, if they had a concern, they would have been showing up at these hearings. And I still think that there's plenty of research that can be done, controlled and otherwise, that would still be permissible by this bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might, with regard to the amount of the hearings, I really must say that as a member of the Senate Rules Committee, this bill probably was heard and had more of an airing than a majority of the bills that we have seen in our Rules Committee in the last month or two. So just as a comparison or a reference point.
Senator Gordley and Senator Bree.
Thank you very much. I asked the question about...
I said the agricultural czar is calling you Republican.
I asked the question about...
The Democrat went out.
Who's going to her?
Please let her continue.
Thank you. Senator Shields, I asked a question about the hearings only because there was not a staff measure summary in my bill file, but that's now been distributed, and it's clear that, you know, there were a couple of hearings, and you've described the content, and so I'm very comfortable with this, and I'm ready to move forward. I just also wanted to point out that I have other information in my file that is very supportive from constituents, and there's also a number of supportive statements from the National Academy of Sciences, the Union of Concerned Scientists, a professor at the Oregon State University, Richard Sessions, who is CEO of Xenomics Incorporated, a Portland biotech company, and who is a former administrative director at OHSU Wollum Institute, a supportive statement from Joe Portwright, an economist with Impressa Consulting, who is also former staff to the Oregon Legislature's Joint Committee on Trade and Economic Development, a supportive statement from the Grocery Manufacturers of America, and also the National Food Processors Association, just to put that on record as well. Thank you.
I would only respond, Senator Gourley, I appreciate you listing all of those. Many of you would know Dr. Sessions, those that are in the natural resources arena, and the other gentleman as well from the university system. I think you said he was from OSU and had a supportive statement. I think that may have been mailed to the committee. I don't remember him being there physically, but I think his testimony was mailed in.
Thank you. Senator Bates was next. Then Senator.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate a couple of things. When it came to committee today, this had been talked about a lot ahead of time, and the policy had pretty well been settled that if it had come out of committee initially without Section 4, we're going straight to the floor to be voted on, and essentially that's what we're allowing to have happen here. So we didn't discuss policy today for that reason. It had been settled already. We're not a policy committee. We just worked it from the fiscal point of view and took the Section 4 amended it out. If you want to start talking policy at this level, that's a different situation. We'll be here all night, and I don't plan to do that. All I'm going to say is let the bill stand on its merits from the point of view of how it came out of its original committee, and we've removed any financial constraints to it, and I would ask you to move it forward.
Very good. Anyone else want to? We've got to give the other side a chance to say something if they would like. I mean, we've entertained the discussion so far. the only fair.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paulette Pyle with Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and our organization is opposed to the bill. There is, and I apologize, this is Terry's bill, not mine, and I don't have the file with me, but there is an Oregon State researcher that I talked to Senator Morris about and I talked to Senator Ben Westlin about that is definitely opposed to this bill because he said he is starting research and this would absolutely disrupt where he's going. So Terry's trying to get here with the information from the office, and I think with the traffic it'll be difficult. But for the record, if you're curious about if there are researchers that are opposed to this bill, there I know of one. I just don't have his name at the top of my tongue, on the tip of my tongue. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we've gone straight a little far afield here in our discussion, but perhaps appropriate. We have these policy bills that come through, and they have fiscal in the back. We're supposed to be looking at the fiscal and stuff and deciding on that they want to move forward, but it's hard to dissociate that all together. So we had a little time. I appreciate the committee's indulgence on that. Further discussion? Seeing none, why don't we go with a roll call vote on this?
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Devlin?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Westlin?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
No.
Chair Schrader?
No.
Motion carried.
Very good. Thank you. Next bill, Senate Bill 998, related to motor vehicles, weight of less than 12,000 pounds. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 998 was referred to the Senate Special Committee on Budget from the Senate Transportation Committee. The measure increases the weight of certain motor vehicles and motor trucks that must register by weight from less than 8,000 to less than 12,000 pounds. Current law requires any vehicle over 8,000 pounds to be registered as a commercial truck regardless of the vehicle's use. The measure also modifies the definition of Class 2 all-terrain vehicles, modifies the weight at which a motor truck violates the speed limit, and requires certain vehicles to remain in the right lane except when passing. The revenue impact of this weight level would reduce highway funds by $2.1 million in the 05-07 biennium and $3 million in 07-09. The cost to process replacement plates and handle renewal transactions is estimated at $80,000 and a limited duration position. The subcommittee amended the bill to lower the weight from 12,000 to 10,000 pounds. The revenue impact at the lower weight limit is decreased to $1.2 million in 05-07 and $1.8 million in 07-09. The cost to process replacement plates and handling renewal transactions is reduced to $21,600 and does not require additional positions. I move Senate Bill 998 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Senate Bill 1100, relating to benefits for performing military service. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1100 is one part of the military veterans benefit package approved for this session. The bill provides benefit programs that were previously introduced in two other House bills. Funding for the programs in the bill is provided in a separate appropriation bill. The bill creates the Oregon Military Emergency Financial Assistance Fund for the Oregon Military Department to provide hardship grants and loans to members and immediate family of Oregon National Guard members on active duty. It also establishes a program in the Department of Veterans Affairs to enhance and expand services provided by the County Veterans Service Officers. We had a great deal of testimony surrounding the County Veterans Service Officers portion of the bill. Your subcommittee provided direction and received assurances from the Director of Veterans Affairs that the rulemaking process to implement these provisions would be inclusive and would have representatives of the County Veterans Service Officers and other stakeholders involved. The amendment to this bill is to provide some housekeeping language and clarification. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 1100 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. You can tell we're getting near the end of session because we now have the legislative branch before us here. House Bill 5155A. It's the budget bill for the six legislative branch agencies, including Legislative Assembly, Legislative Admin Committee, Legislative Council Committee, Legislative Fiscal Office, Legislative Revenue Office, and Commission on Indian Services. This bill was already passed in the House, and the approved expenditures are identical to the version passed in the Senate. However, based on the final negotiated plan, the bill is being amended by the -A2 amendments to simply restore original language that allows the Legislative Assembly to carry over unexpended funds that were appropriated for 2005 regular session expenses so that any such funds can be used for interim expenses. I move the House Bill 5155A be amended, reported out, do pass as amended. Discussion. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I would have asked this question before, but you know, we don't see these committee reports till we come here. And it's the question to Mr. Rocco, actually. The provisions in this for legislative fiscal, where it says to eliminate the rotational program for fiscal analysts, and then you have 1.75, I believe, new FTEs. What does it mean when it says eliminate the rotational? Is this the people that come in on just a session basis? Are we actually going to have any more hours for any more analysts that we're trying to get down to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, yes, it would eliminate the program that's been in existence for a number of years to bring in agency people for session work, and in lieu of that, add a permanent position full-time.
Okay. Do we have much net improvement in terms of the number of hours available to do work?
I think over the entire biennium, you would net additional hours.
Okay.
However, the rotation analysts that do come in work as many hours as all staff works.
Okay.
Good question. Senator Johnson.
Following up on that line of questioning, I, not being privy to some of the negotiations, was the new position contingent on the loss of the rotationals, or are the rotationals no longer a desirable component to have working? I'm trying to understand why you can't have both.
Can't go down narrow.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think it was just a way to finance a new permanent position.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't mean to belabor this, given the hour, but we'll have plenty of time to discuss this in the future public commission on legislature. But I'm just curious. If we were to conclude this session by June 1, would this budget support that?
Let me understand your question. By June 1?
Yes.
There was
like a month ago.
2 months ago.
We're not used to that.
I point that out to you here.
We're puzzled by that.
I thought you might.
June 1?
I thought you might be thinking June 1 next year. I'll make clear.
Ouch.
The appropriation for the assembly operations would be significantly reduced if that were the case. Based on current expenditure patterns, as of the end of July, the entire session budget will be extended except for approximately $750,000.
I guess my question was, if you're to accelerate the process, could you do it with the existing staff? And I guess my supposition is that it would be difficult to do that.
That would be correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Just
last further discussion.
Yeah. I don't want to discuss. I just want to make a comment, and I just think this may be an opportunity to say thank you to our staff.
Yes.
You know, they have put in, when you talk about time and hours and work, I don't think you're going to find anyone who has worked as hard and as long and as many hours as our staff. And I just have to say that for the record, for individuals who's listening out there, that as we talk about budgets and talking about adding one point, a staffing, that actually they're probably still understaffed. And I just need to say that because they really do put in a lot of work on our behalf, and they put up with an awful lot. So I just think that it's good to say thank you.
100-hour weeks are not unusual this time of session for these individuals. So, all right, with that, seeing no further discussion, are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, we are adjourned.
I think that.